Welcome to a podcast of Beyond the Book, a presentation of the not-for-profit Copyright Clearance Center. Copyright Clearance Center is the world's largest provider of copyright compliance solutions through a wide range of innovative licensing services and comprehensive educational programs for authors, publishers, and their audiences in academia, business, and research institutions. Become a fan of Beyond the Book on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Subscribe to the free podcast and never miss a program at www.beyondthebook.com.
It's 2 o'clock in New Orleans, 3 o'clock in Boston and New York, and that would make it, I believe, 10 o'clock in the evening in Kampala, Uganda, where the missing panelist is this evening, Stephen Kiza. But he is going to be able to join us. I'll explain all of that in just a moment, but first, I do want to welcome you. My name is Chris Keneally. I am Director of Author Relations and Business Development for Copyright Clearance Center in Boston, online at copyright.com. And we have a number of people joining us here on the panel today, and as I say, virtually as well. So we look forward to a program. I hope you will bear with me as I manipulate some of the technology involved here. Just a little bit of patience will be very much appreciated on your part. But we do, in fact, really appreciate all of you being here. I should say that I am also the host and moderator of a podcast series that Copyright Clearance Center presents on a weekly basis called Beyond the Book, online at beyondthebook.com. We're findable on iTunes and any of the podcatching services out there. It's a presentation that draws on my own experience as a journalist. I was a reporter for the Boston Globe, the New York Times, and also worked for National Public Radio and WGBH in Boston. And I enjoy the journalistic approach to things, asking questions, learning about things not that you know, but about things that you don't know. And from time to time, I get surprised, which is always a pleasure for a journalist. And I was surprised last summer when a Google alert came into my desk that had picked up a review of the Beyond the Book podcast. And that review was written by one of our panelists here, Denny Haya. I'll tell you more about Denny in just a moment. But he spoke highly of Beyond the Book, which, of course, I appreciated. And so I wrote to him and said, well, thank you. And if you have any suggestions for programs, please do write me, you know, let me know what you think would make a good program. And I didn't really expect to hear back all that soon, but sure enough, immediately, I had an idea from Denny. And I should tell you briefly about Denny Haya, who is second from my left right here. Denny Haya comes to us today from the Netherlands. He's a knowledge and information manager for the Human Resources IT Division at Royal Dutch Shell. He's responsible for the definition and implementation of a strategy covering technical, content, and organizational aspects of knowledge and information management for Shell. And Denny, welcome to our program. He is also the International Relations Chair for the Division of Petroleum and Energy Resources for SLA. He was the recipient of the Quantum 2 InfoStar Award in 2007. And he was elected SLA Europe Information Professional in 2008. So I suppose I ought not to have been so surprised that he had an idea for me. And his idea helped me to meet, at least by telephone and the internet, Stephen Kiza. Stephen is an assistant librarian for the Ministry of Energy and Mineral Resources in Kampala, Uganda, where he's worked as a solo librarian for the last 5 years. He's responsible for the day-to-day running of the resource center there, which he started in 2004. Previously, Stephen had worked for Gamut International, an automobile and machinery importing company there in Uganda, and prior to that as a teacher and high school librarian in South Africa. He'll be able to tell you more about himself in just a moment as well. And finally, very special guest, want to welcome, just inducted into the SLA Hall of Fame, past president of SLA, and we'll tell you more about him, but you probably all know Guy St. Clair, and Guy, very nice to have you here as well. The idea that Denny presented to me was a story, a very personal story for him, about a librarian in Kampala, Uganda, who he had been assisting to provide, first of all, sponsorship for membership in SLA, but also a variety of resources, online resources. And what Denny impressed upon me was the really stark contrast between the situation in the Netherlands or here in the United States and in a country like Uganda, very much a developing country. The things that we take for granted, the supply of information that we are always sort of exasperated by in this country is very much a trickle in a place like Uganda. And so if you're a librarian and you're working in a country where development of the resources requires sufficient information, you look at our situation with wonder and perhaps just a bit of envy. And so that opportunity to share information was what Denny was doing with Stephen. And what I found was that they had been doing all of this entirely through the internet. They had never actually spoken, but they had emailed each other for quite some time. So what I offered to do with Beyond the Book was connect them and have a discussion about this work they were involved in, because I felt it was a very interesting, specific case of a very important general lesson about the ways that information can be shared. And of course, for Copyright Clearance Center, global information resources are what we actually base our business upon. And so this was very important to learn about this example. So if all goes well here, I'd like to play for you that opening moment in the Beyond the Book program back in November.
Do we have Denny Haya?
I'm here.
Well, Denny Haya, let me introduce you to somebody that you've written to many times in the past, but never actually spoken to before, so far as I understand, at least. I've got Stephen Kiza on the line from Kampala.
Hey, Stephen.
Yeah?
Good to hear you.
Well, gentlemen, am I right? This is the first time you've ever spoken on the telephone.
True.
Stephen?
Yeah, true, yeah. I'm actually speaking to... I'm hearing his voice for the first time.
Oh, well, but you've been correspondents, colleagues, friends, really, for quite a little while now.
Yeah, sure. I've been corresponding using email.
Yes. Well, that's just one example, I think, of the way that the digital revolution is changing the way we share information and share our cultures and our experiences. And I want to welcome both of you to Beyond the Book.
I think we have to give them a round of applause. Right. And you might think, well, how many times did he have to redo that one take? That was how he would have delivered it had he been standing here. And I apologize for the quality of the line, as they always say in the BBC, but that's the best we could do. And frankly, as I mentioned at the top, that is pretty good. When we did the original call, it was very frustrating to be losing the line as regularly as we did. I saw a lot of nodding going on from Guy St. Clair. I think he understands the situation. I saw some nodding in the room as well. Looking forward to continuing the discussion. And at first, though, I guess I want to turn to Denny Haye while I play with this. Well, I guess we can leave it there. I want to turn to Denny Haye and ask you about this experience that you've had, Denny, over the last couple of years now working with Stephen. You mentioned the research that he had done that went into this presentation. This wasn't just slapped together by any means, as we could see. Tell us about the background that you know because of your relationship with him.
Well, it's a little emotional for me just to hear him presentation, because we spend so much time and energy trying to get him here. And every time when I read his emails and I see this, I'm thinking, if he were born in Europe or the U.S., he would be, you know, a rising star in SLA. He would do so much. He wrote a 8 to 12 page article with research, with footnotes and everything. But he has very little. But the one thing that he has is hope. And every email ends with that sentence. No matter how dire the situation is, when the internet is down again, when he has to go to a cyber cafe to get his work done, or whether he doesn't get paid a month because there's a screw up somewhere, he keeps going. He wants to be the best librarian he can be, and I think we can all learn from that.
In the way that we're going to continue this discussion, we're trying to use Stephen as a specific case for a larger general problem. You come here as a representative of SLA Europe. Can you talk about some of the partnerships that are like yours, or some of the efforts that SLA Europe itself is making to work with developing countries, librarians in developing countries?
Not just SLA Europe, but I know that a lot of the division of chapters are now realizing that through the internet and through communication, you can help people. For example, there are United Nations programs to provide access to full-text databases, but people in the developed nations don't know about that. It's only because I was aware of that. My Elsevier rep told me that there was something called Hinari and Ogari, where they can get access to Science Direct, Springer Link, a whole bunch of other stuff. But someone needs to tell them, and for us, it's one email. And they have access, and when we sent that email to Steve, and I know that has been copied to a lot of other developing nations librarians, you know, it's like the heavens are opening for them, because all of a sudden they have a collection. They can get access to the same information as we have. So SLA Europe is actively encouraging their members to reach out, whatever it means, to make sure that peace people know what's available, that through SLA they can do training, and that we can provide coaching and mentoring even virtually.
Right. And I should mention, there's another podcast in the Beyond the Book series relevant to this, an interview with Maurice Long, who was the STM president, I believe, and is now working with STM in Europe on support for something called Research for Life, which is online at researchforlife.org. And they are the overarching umbrella organization, I believe, that sponsors Hinari and Agora and the other training programs for librarians in developing countries. And I urge you to take a look at that on Beyond the Book as well. I'd like to turn now to Guy St. Clair. And Guy, welcome again and congratulations again. Guy St. Clair is with SMR International. He's a consulting specialist for knowledge services. He's a past president of SLA, a Hall of Famer, as we said. He is now working on a program that is sponsored by the UN at the University of Kenya. And again, I saw you doing a lot of nodding during Stephen's presentation. Before I ask you some questions about the broader point that we're trying to drive home today, what was it that you recognized in his case that you've seen yourself firsthand?
I think probably the most humbling and the most exciting prospect that I see is the almost passionate desire to get as far as they can, our colleagues in developing countries, to match as closely as they can the work that we're able to do in our knowledge centers, our specialized libraries, information centers, that sort of thing. They're very aware that our colleagues are very aware of what we're able to do. I happen to be, just a quick aside, I happen to be in Kenya, in Nairobi, working with the United Nations Human Settlement Program, popularly known as UN Habitat. Our company was called out last November for a six-month contract to develop knowledge strategy for the agency. And I'll be going back again now for another project, but that project has finished. But the beauty of that, and to respond to what you've just asked, Chris, the beauty of that six-month program was that my team and I had the opportunity to meet with many, many of the workers at UN Habitat, not just the ones who are working there at the UN campus compound in Nairobi, but many of the workers in the field who would come back and we'd get a chance to work with them, because we wanted to know from them what their needs were as far as knowledge services were concerned, how they were sharing knowledge with the people in the field. We don't say natives in Africa, we say the nationals. How they were sharing knowledge with the nationals, and how they were doing things like building bridges, digging all those wells in a village, and all those things that an organization like UN Habitat does. So the enormous amount of knowledge that is being collected and being shared, our job was to try to come up with a strategy so that it could be done better. And I think one of the things that happened was that I was able to get to know many of the nationals that were working either at UN Habitat or in other areas that I got exposed to. And this overwhelming, it's almost a passion to be as good as they can be. They really want to do it. There are some impediments, naturally. I mean, Kenya itself, which is where I work, is just a little bit over 100 years old. I mean, the settlement is a little over 100 years old. The country's, of course, only been independent for a couple of decades, several decades. But one of the things that I found that I find in my work is there are great grasping for opportunities. And may I take a moment and tell
Please.
You about two activities
Please.
That
Please.
I'm involved in? Okay, I'm earning my living working for UN Habitat. They're paying my fee, and they're enabling me to live and sustain myself. However, I don't know, I'm sort of well known in some of these areas. And when I got there, it turned out that word had gotten around that Mr. KM Knowledge Services was coming to town, and could we introduce him to this one, and could we introduce him to that one? And as I met people and worked with them and got to know them, I realized that there were two opportunities for Mr. Guy to be of some service as a volunteer. One was with a new NGO, non-governmental organization, called Information Africa Organization, IAO. And Chris mentioned that I'm with a company called SMR International. And so I must tell you that the website is smr-knowledge.com. I urge you to go there and read the things that are there about Information Africa Organization. Quickly, why that NGO exists. Very Druckerian. We go all the way back to Peter Drucker and the responsibility gap and all of that. What has been determined is that the international organizations are not really capable of bringing in huge plants, huge building projects, that sort of thing, without a workforce that is able to deal in ICT and KM. So this NGO has been put together to try to raise that, to get out to the young people in Kenya, of which there are many, many young people, pretty good education.
Stephen made that point in his presentation in Uganda, where the average population there is predominantly teenagers.
Teenagers.
It's going to be an explosion of workers.
And they have fairly good pretty good educations, but there are no jobs. They finish up their education, and there's no job for them. So the way that we see this happening, and this, you can see why I'm getting so passionate about this, what IAO is trying to do is to establish programs and services so that they can train these people and these young people, and then eventually there will be a workforce there that the international companies will say, okay, we can go there and do our work.
That gets out of that catch 22.
Out of that catch 22, which then leads me to Mr. Guy's other volunteer work, which is at the other end of the spectrum. And at the moment, I'm working with Egerton University. And Stephen talked about agricultural studies. Kenya's a huge agricultural country. And, I mean, the agriculture is a huge thing there. And in the agricultural studies program at Egerton University, they actually have an AKM program. And now what they want to do is use Mr. Guy to see if they can expand that KM program to other subject areas at the university level, at the, into the graduate area. And then we're working with some other organizations and with some members of parliament to see if we can't even do it in the whole university system. Whether it'll all turn out or not, because, you know, in any country you've got your politics and all that. So Mr. Guy's volunteer work is basically at two ends of the spectrum, trying to help this NGO do something with the training of the young people in ICT and KM skills, and then at the other end of the spectrum to see what we can do as far as graduate programs and get. They're in a position of being able to skip over, but to leapfrog over a lot of the stuff that the rest of us had to struggle with. And so they're ready to move right on to knowledge services and have it as part of their graduate education. So
right.
That's a lot to say. That's a very long answer to your very short question.
But I think very informative, because again, one imagines, first of all, the sort of out for the Catch-22, but also in propagating the training of the librarians, you're beginning to put into place a structure that won't depend upon outside help at some stage of the game. There still will be a transition period, but eventually they'll be training themselves.
But I do want to respond to the fast tracking. His request or his comment about Stephen's comment about fast tracking. Actually, there are ways to do that, some of those are being talked about by IAO, and some are being talked about at the university level. And I want to give you just an example which you might be able to, or we at SLA might be able to pick up on. IAO, like any NGO, is of course going to all the big foundations and going to the major organizations like you and Habitat, UNESCO, etc., trying to get funding to do the work they want to do. But we've also recently come up with another idea, and I can't remember what the charity was when I was a boy, but there was some kind of an organization that if you sent some money to, it was a Feed the Children type thing. It wasn't Feed the Children, but it was that type of organization. If you sent some money, you would get back a photograph of a child and a family that you were helping to support, and sometime you could actually have a little exchange there. Well, what I've suggested to IO, and we're thinking about moving forward with this, is that, yes, we want to go after the bucks that will help with the big projects, but we also need to, in America and Western Europe, look at the small businesses and the individual donors, and we've actually come up with an idea, not yet fleshed out completely, but something like that charity I was just referring to. Whereas, say my company sends, we can't send $35 million, we can't even send $1 million, but we might be able to send $1,000 or $500, and that way IAO could identify four or five, or by Kenya financial standards, maybe 20 young people who could be trained in ICT and KM skills. And in the process, this isn't an advertising thing for the company or the person, but just in the process, they could be told, your training was supplied by XYZ Corporation or Fred Schmertz in Oklahoma City or something like that. And that establishes a person-to-person connection between the person who's learned the ICT and KM skills and the organization or the person that supplied some of the funding. Well, I heard you talking about, Stephen talking about how SLA individuals as an organization might help. One thing we might think about is to look at it as an individual person-to-person thing. If we got in touch with Stephen and said, tell us about a library colleague of yours, or an information colleague, or a government worker colleague who needs some advice. Set up some sort of a little individual person-to-person thing through an SLA member and that person. It may come to nothing, but on the other hand, there's the potential it might be something really neat.
Right.
Anyway, that's one suggestion.
Right. And Denny, I mean, that's essentially what you've done writ large, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And anyone, if I can make it work and my colleagues can make it work, anyone can make it work. The only thing we had was email and not giving up. And with an SLA, email does so much. Just as an illustration, when Stephen was turned down for his visa, we were all, feeling very down. But within a week, through email, people I have never met were offering their help. Gloria Zamora was reaching out to a state governor. We got a lawyer who somehow got in the loop, who was writing letters to the embassy. There were people wanting to put up petitions who had never met Stephen, who only knew the podcast. And I think that's the power of SLA. You know, we're a big group, and we can do a lot if we put our minds to it.
Your title for this program, because the title is A Dream Come True,
Right.
But actually, it's a dream that can come true.
Right.
I mean, there are ways to make this happen.
Right. And I think for me, the remarkable aspect of this, when I first heard about Denny listening to Beyond the Book, it wasn't something I imagined. Of course, every podcast, every posting to any blog is instantly global. You forget that, though. You're so accustomed to putting things online and thinking about that immediate audience, that audience you can imagine. There's this audience you can't imagine under circumstances that are very difficult to conceive of. And whether that's, you know, just Denny walking to work listening to the podcast, or Stephen at work on the shores of Lake Victoria, you have to kind of pinch yourself every once in a while and say, whatever I do now is global by definition. It's easy to forget. I'd like to open up the conversation here for others in the audience. Again, I've seen some shaking of the heads. We are recording the program, so we will be putting this out as part of the Beyond the Book podcast series. So if you will, remember, too, that your question is going to go global. So what we're going to need to do is swap a microphone.
Yep.
And Denny, if you'd step up here.
Oh, we can share this.
And I will work my way down to the audience. And I don't know if anybody wants to start it off. Candy, we were introduced briefly. You'll have to tell people who you are. But you had some opportunity to try to assist in the process to get Stephen here. But there are some other broader lessons as well. Talk about that. And tell us who you are.
Yes, my name is Candace Keller Raber, and I work at DeVry University in Orlando, but I have an interest in energy, and I was the membership chair for about 3 years of the Division of Petroleum Energy Resources. And as membership chair, I got forwarded Stephen's interest in the SLA. He had found us online, and he was very interested, and so that started the ball rolling, and I just kind of asked the human-to-human question, so, you know, what's your country like, and what do you have there for energy resources in Uganda? And it was, you know, humorous, and so we got a little rapport there going. And he always refers to himself as Kizza Stephen, and I thought his first name was Kizza, so we had to, anyway, you know, get that straightened out. But the thing was is that it turned out he was a very serious person about being a librarian in Uganda, and he needed the resources. And then, you know, here in America we have so much. There was a movement. Someone had gone through a big weeding process, and so there were a bunch of books that he could have possibly used. But the sending of them, the mailing of them, the cost for the postage was going to be in the hundreds of dollars. And I'm not sure exactly how that turned out. They were going to appeal to, if there was a United Nations, a group that, you know, did mailings and that kind of stuff with real physical books. That's a problem, and that's a good part of the online. And so the full text things are good. But I wish him well if he's listening to this, and we'll look forward to meeting you, Stephen, in 2012.
Well, thanks for that, Candy. And Denny, you have seen pictures of Stephen's office and resource center. Those shelves are just about bare.
Yes, it's a picture that as a librarian makes you almost cry. Because it's empty shelves with some random books, some computers that, you know, you would give to your old neighbors because they're, you know, almost useless. And as you know, his internet connection keeps cutting in and cutting out, because if someone at the ministry forgets to pay the internet bill, the internet is down. But hey, that's life. So then he has to go to the cyber cafe in town to get some work done. And as you've also noticed, that the phone system is very unreliable. It will work for 2 minutes and then drop. So Right. Very hard to do your work.
Well, and what I like about it, and I'm hoping somebody else might have a question, I think you might, but is the information sharing, you know, we would think of it as kind of one way. We're going to give Stephen information. And what struck me, Candy, when you were speaking, was that we were getting information from him. We were beginning to understand what his situation was like, what his country was like, and that's a learning process that goes both ways. I think that's very important to say. Do you have something? Tell us who you are.
Okay, I'm Jane, the founder of Bhutto Library Project. We build libraries in sub-Saharan African countries for publicly accessible libraries for children and youth. I have a few different comments, and I'm afraid I came in a little bit late in the middle of the presentation here, but I just comment on what you just ended up with. I'm very glad to hear a greater recognition that people here who want to help have a lot they need to learn, actually, that there are extremely capable people in Africa, and I've lived and worked on sub-Saharan Africa for some 30 years or so, and so have known wonderful, smart, talented people. One concern I have, and it's wonderful that our colleagues here would like to help, and certainly the Lobuto Project has been financed to a large extent through the interest and support of SLA individual members and corporate members. But one thing that concerns me about that I've seen over many, many years is a sort of a siloing of relationships between Europeans and Americans who would like to help in the library and information profession, going, you know, from individuals or groups here to a small individual, usually focused on an individual, as in this case, in Africa. And Africa is my interest, so I'm just speaking about Africa. And so you run into people all the time that say, well, we're doing this with this person, and who didn't know that perhaps this person, and this person in the same area are doing similar things. And I mean, I could name a number of projects in Kenya actually doing similar things that I know about because of this silo and that silo. And I've always felt that SLA in particular, a strength that we have for helping the information profession in Africa would be trying to encourage the development of professional a conversation within a country, and that helping individuals in a particular place, maybe getting some books for a particular point in time, might be more sustainable and more effective, certainly through education. Absolutely, there's no question about education and training being a fundamental part of sustainability, but also through encouraging librarians to organize to work with their own government, and then perhaps they might not have a visa problem when they want to participate. And I just say that very directly. We just brought somebody from Zambia to our country and got a visa very quickly because we have an agreement with the Ministry of Education who support our efforts throughout the country. It's a longer, slower thing, and it's perhaps not as satisfying as being able to just send somebody something or work with them on a particular project. But ultimately, for sustainability of development of the information sector, I think that really is what we need to encourage people to be doing.
Well Jane, thanks for that comment, and it seems really apropos to the discussion and kind of advances us further too, I think. Guy, any thoughts about that at all?
We're not. Yes, absolutely. I think it'd be. I think your idea of a sort of a macro approach to and sharing. Certainly, that's what KM Knowledge Services is all about: is knowledge sharing and that sort of thing. Your idea about working with the Ministry of Education to see that these things happen is an excellent way to go about it. In the two particular cases I discussed, the education at the two different ends of the spectrum, the former, the NGO, actually grew out of Kenya's knowledge policy, information policy, which came out a couple of years ago. But I think that's very, very good information for me to take back and share with my colleagues there and see what see if there aren't other, if they can't start putting together a consortium where they can talk about these things.
And could I just add one other thing, too? Again, from what we know how to do as good knowledge professionals, as good information professionals, the idea of marketing. I noticed that there was an idea that there was an idea put forth in the presentation of being proactive in going out to rural areas and being involved with fishing people and that, whatever. Now, what special librarian do we know in our societies or in European societies? We have a job, and our job is to serve the people, the corporation, or whomever we serve. We're not really necessarily at liberty in our job to say, well, oh, you know, we should be proactive and go out and serve people. I mean, the fact is, you know, we have to recognize that, that university librarians have their job, that, and you know, it's just the same as here. And that actually perhaps, again, encouraging people to come together and marketing the important role they can play to government. I mean, I've been involved in a couple of these national information policy exercises in Malawi and in Zambia, and nothing ever really came out of it in the case of those two countries, because there wasn't any, you know, the government, everyone had a piece of paper and everyone said fine, but being proactive in terms of really saying this is what we can contribute to the country from our various different things, just as we do here in SLA.
Well, I think an example of that, if I might just quickly respond, was I mentioned that about the agricultural study is at Egerton University, where they actually have a KM Knowledge Services curriculum for that particular subject area, which they want to replicate in the other subject areas. Well, that's, you know, that's very much local and homegrown, and what they're looking to us for now is just expertise in the knowledge services and knowledge management, the big subject of not the agricultural stuff, but the big subject. And I think that is an admirable way to go about it, is to have the universities themselves in place. Excuse me for jumping in.
Yeah, no, well, we have another contribution from the audience. So tell us who you are and what you'd like to add.
Hi, my name is Janine Scarmazzino. I'm from California State University at San Luis Obispo. And I have a couple comments. The first is governments change. So that it's a great idea to have interactions with governments and try to set up relationships, but I have not personally worked in Africa, but I've talked to a number of people that have and gone to many a presentation, and there's been a lot of discussion that I've heard that they've had a lot of problems that governments change. I really think that we need to learn from them, and another comment that you made about fisheries and that all of us have jobs and for a specialist to go into the field is difficult and something that you said about working with fisheries is that I've talked to a library specialist at Purdue who is working, I believe it is in Kenya, and the way that they've set up an MOU with the university there and Purdue is that there's a lot of researchers from the United States, from Europe, doing work on the fisheries areas, agriculture. There are people from that country helping them collect that data. And instead of us just bringing that information and data home, they are making sure that that data is staying in that country and coming back. So that those kinds of partnerships, I think, can be developed, and that part of people's job descriptions, the way to sell it maybe to an American university is there's a lot of discussion about sharing data across the world as far as everybody gets a benefit from it. So that kind of thing. And I'm sorry. And a couple other things I just wanted to quick say was I just had questions about, I've heard how many phones are in the countries, even though there's not a lot of fiber optics and even though they're being laid and even though, you know, an entire university is sharing this much bandwidth, at some point could an incredible amount of open access links be sent to the gentleman that you're working with, even though he's yet to be able to put it up on a website, at some point, could a very simple website be put up that then could be accessed via a phone?
Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, what I know about the African continent is at one point there were as many telephone lines in all of Africa as there were in Manhattan. I don't know that's still true, but the cell phone revolution is changing things tremendously because they're able to skip over all of that. And now I think you're right. Putting information rather than thinking about it as a laptop accessible product, something that might be a phone accessible product is an interesting thought. Maybe we'll just get one more comment. Is anybody else from the audience? Because I really appreciate it. And again, I think for the audience who will be listening to this later on, I think hearing from all of you is as important as hearing from us. Well, sure. Okay.
So, yeah, governments do change all the time, just as they do here. But that's the point of having an agreement with government. We have a memorandum of understanding. The permanent secretary with whom we did it has changed, but it's with the government. It's a solid agreement. I mean, if there were a coup, you know, that might be something very different. But African governments need to have the same respect that we pay, you know, people who have authority in our own society. And in fact, it's really resented when I've seen attempts to do projects that aren't properly registered, don't recognize the government's role in oversight and their authority, and they don't last. And so that's what happens if government changes. But really, when I say working with the government, I mean having a real understood and clear agreement.
Well, I think all this is reasonably helpful information for everybody, informative to me. I hope you've enjoyed it and found it worthwhile. Thank you all for coming. I want to thank on our panel today Denny Heyer from the Netherlands at Shell, and from Guy St. Clair from SMR Knowledge and past president of SLA. Thank you both very much indeed for joining us. My name's Chris Keneally from Copyright Clearance Center's Beyond the Book, and appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Beyond the Book is an educational presentation of the not-for-profit Copyright Clearance Center, with conferences and seminars featuring leading authors and editors, publishing analysts, and information technology specialists. Beyond the Book is the premier source for knowledge on the latest business issues facing today's dynamic publishing industry, from initial research to final publication and beyond.